Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Northumberland County Council had a tumultuous year in 2024. The question is, will it continue into 2025? On today's show, Northumberland County Warden Brian Ostrander will try to answer that question. Past issues like the Coburg Encampment, 310 Division Street, county finances, affordable housing are only a few examples of some of the very heated, tense debates that took place in the council chambers in 2024. Then, there is the upcoming review of staff and services. Some politicians are talking about restructuring the county into a single tier, while others want to increase shared services. Both sides are looking to keep taxes down. Ostrander will address all of this and more. I am absolutely delighted to have with me today Northumberland County Warden Brian Ostrander. Welcome back to Consider This Northumberland.
It's always a pleasure, Robert. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into the grocery list of things the County Council did in 2024, how would you describe how county councillors, the politicians, functioned in 2024? Sure, you got things done, but how would you describe or assess the path to get there?
You know, by and large, with some exceptions, by and large, I think everyone was rowing together and trying to move the needle forward as best they could. Obviously, we had some disagreements. We had at least one member of council, as you know, who may very well go down as the dissenting vote or dissenting opinion. That doesn't make unhealthy discussion. In fact, it makes for a robust discussion. It provides us with opportunity for that moment of sober second thought. Are we in fact going down the right way, and should we be shifting gears, or are we in fact headed in the right direction? So at the end of the day, I think what we did was do our best on behalf of the good people of Northumberland. And I think even the dissenting opinion person may agree with that. Maybe not, but I think so.
I'm sure listeners won't be surprised that you wanted to paint this as healthy debate. But let's think about some of the exchanges and some of the tensions that were created. Let's also think about some of the times when people were exchanging with great emotion and sometimes even open hostility. Do you have any plans or strategies going into 2025 to bring down the temperature a bit, granting that, you know, you're going to try and have healthy debate?
I think at the end of the day, we have to rely on everyone's goodwill when they come to the horseshoe to bring good ideas and good concepts, and do so in a respectful manner. And so it will be my desire, as it always is, and my practice to remind people about decorum and how we engage in healthy debate without offering personal attack or without being unkind to one another. At the end of the day, I mean, let's be frank. We're talking about the differences of opinion and perhaps the differences of style between Mayor Cleveland and I. At the end of the day, and let's not skirt around it here. This was also the same person who nominated me for warden for a second term. So, you know, politicians can have at each other and still respect one another. And I think that's certainly where Lucas and I are.
One big item in the past year was the opening of 310 Division Street. Now, there was a lot of time spent trying to meet your obligations around providing an emergency shelter and the handling of the encampment. But looking back, what lessons did you learn over the year?
I think the lesson of trying to get ahead of the curve was really the one that I can bring to the table, and the curve might be not assuming that the lower tier is in agreement with everything that the upper tier wants to do. And I think perhaps we can avoid some of that by engaging in earlier discussions, although we endeavored to do that. Also getting ahead of the curve in terms of having a better crystal ball and trying to figure out where things are going to be. You know, I don't think any of us thought there would be, you know, two, three, 4 years ago, thought there would be an encampment of the size we had in Coburg. I don't think anybody thought that. I don't think anybody in social services thought that. I don't think anybody at the provincial level thought that. So, you know, especially when, you know, all the economists are saying the economy is pretty robust. So, you know, there is a disconnect in the world today between those who are saying we've got a pretty robust economy, and those people who are going to the grocery store and having trouble making ends meet. We're in a very strange place in an economy right
Who should be looking at their crystal ball?
now.
Is it the politicians? Is it staff? I mean, if you're going to get ahead of the curve, where does that responsibility lie?
I would say with both. You know, I mean, certainly we rely on staff to provide recommendations, but we also know that those are the same people who are extremely busy on a day-to-day basis. Endeavoring to keep the wheels on a bus that isn't being funded as well or as robustly as we know it should be. And we've had this discussion before. There's only so much that we can do at a county level or at a municipal level with the funding model we have. And I think our provincial friends would say the same thing. There's only so much they can do without going to, you know, without digging deeper into a hole that we don't know who's going to pay at the end of the day. So, it's you know, there's no easy answer here. These are difficult problems that require tremendously complex solutions.
I'm glad you mentioned money because a lot of money was spent dealing with this situation. Some of it was budgeted, some not. In the end, how would you characterize the financial impact of the encampment and the opening of 310 Division Street?
Well, you know, dealing with housing issues and homelessness issues is an expensive endeavor, no doubt. So I would describe it as exactly that, an expensive endeavor. But we can't just look at things, you know, in the thermometer of money. We have to also say, are we doing the right thing here? And my opinion, obviously, is that the answer is yes. Is it enough? Well, I don't think it's ever really enough. But for now, it's doing exactly what we wanted it to do. It's giving people a roof over their head, either temporarily, you know, overnight, I mean, by temporarily, or, you know, an emergency sheltering concept on the other two floors. And it's providing transitionary housing for folks who are willing to seek treatment and do the work on themselves that they need to do to get more permanent housing and jobs in the community, etc.
How do you feel about the additional money that had to be spent resolving the issues as they arose, especially around dealing with Coburg?
Well, you know, I don't think we spent a whole lot of extra money in terms of what it costs to deal with the emergency. What was it called? It's emergency, the sheltering bylaw. I don't think there was a whole lot of extra. There was some money with lawyers and stuff, but that was going to happen anyway. Though, you know, there's always money that we need to spend with lawyers to check to make sure we're doing the right thing, that we're not going to get caught in the middle of something or something like that. So, you know, we're not talking about many millions of dollars here. What we're talking about is due diligence funds, and you know, I have no issue with making sure that we're not putting the people of Northumberland in a bad position financially when we go down a road together.
Do you have a final tally on how much extra had to be spent?
I do not.
Because what we're talking about, I think, is the emergency care establishment bylaw. And that was very contentious and it was hotly debated. Both sides reached an agreement in the end, but in your opinion, were the residents of Northumberland County well served once all was said and done?
So I think we would have a differing of opinion on this one as well between the mayor of Coburg and I. But I would say that I'm not sure that overall the citizens of Northumberland were well served with the ECE bylaw at the end of the day. I think we would have been much better served having the two organizations come to the table and hammer out an agreement as was originally requested. But I don't want to prosecute that over and over again, Robert. We are working together now with this ECE bylaw, and we will continue to do so.
Well, going forward, there were legal questions raised, and the Ontario Human Rights Commissioner raised concerns. Do you see the county following up to challenge this bylaw in any way, shape, or form?
At this stage, I don't see a need to. Should we find ourselves being fined under the bylaw and feel that it is being done unjustly, without we may have to go down that road, but at this stage, I don't see a need to do that.
All this activity puts a spotlight on affordable housing in the county. Now, a big announcement for the county was the ongoing work on Elgin Street, but also the plans for 123 King Street in Colborne. What is the outlook for affordable housing development in the county for 2025?
We've purchased the Westwood property in Coburg to add additional affordable housing units there. We don't have a plan there. We're still checking out what lands in those lands are available for development, how much of it can be actually developed. And so there's opportunity there for sure. There are two projects in Coburg. You mentioned Elgin Street, but there's also the Ontario Street project, which is well underway as well, or starting to get its legs under it. So there are lots of opportunities. The municipality of Brighton purchased about 50 acres of land outside our built boundary. So there's work to be done from a land use planning perspective in terms of getting it in the built boundary, and then providing those land, making those lands available to developers. And certainly the County of Northumberland would be one of those quote, quote, affordable housing developers that we would look to from an affordability perspective as well.
In November, a developer and a landowner held a public meeting in Hamilton Township to discuss a proposal to build on 1,600 acres of land along County Road 2 corridor between Port Hope and Coburg. Now, there's not been a sale of land, as we know, or any formal proposals. Still, is the county monitoring this proposal?
I know that staff were present for the public open houses for, and we're just mon are monitoring things, but not in any official capacity. We haven't been asked to do anything. Nobody has filed an application with the county, and the local municipality has not forwarded anything to the county from an official plan perspective. But our planning staff at the county are endeavoring to keep their finger on the pulse of that particular potential project, because it would be massive.
Now, for the listeners that may not understand the difference between Hamilton Township planning and the county planning, and why would the county have its thumb in this pie, could you just explain to them how that works and why the county is so interested?
Sure. So the county would have to be the upper tier planning authority that would provide the okay to any official plan amendment at the lower tier level, and may even require a look at the county's official plan for amendment as well in those on those lands.
How big a priority is preserving prime agricultural land? Because I know under the county plan right at the moment, that's what this is designated as.
We're always looking to preserve prime agricultural lands. Northumberland County is a community that depends on its farming activity. But the reality is the province of Ontario depends on counties like Northumberland and other rural counties across the province of Ontario for our agriculture. If we are stripping our agricultural lands away, even as close as we are to Toronto, We will be impacting the ability to feed people across Ontario and across Canada. So we have to be very careful about how we take these lands away and redesignate them for growth.
How far will the county go to ensure good agricultural lands are kept in the hands of farmers and not developers?
Well, we're not involved in private land sales, so we can't force anybody to, or private land uses, we can't force anybody to farm farmable land. But what we can do is prevent people from building on it, by making sure that it remains designated as prime ag. And that, future generations are able to farm it. And what that looks like, again, just like with homelessness, my crystal ball isn't working on that file either.
At its final meeting of the year, County Council gave staff a mandate to come back with a report looking at costing for employees at the county. Now, the aim seemed pretty clear. Where can money be saved? Now, to begin, what is realistic when it comes to county staffing levels in the context of the range of services it must provide in terms of mandated levels, like how many nurses are at the Golden Plow or snowplow drivers? How much flexibility actually exists?
I think what council will discover is not much. I think there's probably more opportunity in the I think what we've called the municipal restructuring opportunity. And I'm not suggesting that, borders are going to disappear. I think there may be opportunity for very significant shared servicing. And I think what we've seen is where we have, two departments doing the same thing. There may be opportunity to amalgamate departments, either up or down the stream, in order to make sure that costs are being saved somewhere. At the end, as we say, at the end of the day, nobody cares who's spending the money, as long as we're not asking for it twice, out of people's pockets. So, if there's opportunity to save either at the lower tier or at the upper tier by uploading or downloading, as long as there's money to be saved, I think we can look very seriously at making sure those services are amalgamated or at least shared.
That makes a lot of sense. But when you listen to the debate around the county council table, that wasn't as clear. I mean, there was a lot of talk, amalgamation, the word got used a couple of times. There's been various politicians talking about, let's get Brighton and off to join Quinte West, and let's get Trent Hills to join Peterborough County, and we'll pare things down. Is amalgamation an option or a goal when you look around the county council chambers at your fellow representatives? Is that something that's being pushed for, or is it more this idea of how many more services can we actually go out there and bring under an umbrella, whichever is the most cost effective, to save taxpayers' money?
Yeah, amalgamation is an option always. I don't think it's a goal. I don't think that that's where we would end up. I don't think I think a lot of people will remember amalgamations from 25 years ago, and the bad taste in the mouth that some of those amalgamations left for some folks. I'm frequently reminded that it didn't really save a lot of money. Amalgamations didn't. It streamlined some processes, but I think hardly any of us saw a decrease in staffing levels, as an example. And our budgets are highly human resource level based. So unless there's those opportunities, I don't see that that's really where the cost savings will be found. I think the cost savings will be found in removing redundancies.
Right.
The one thing I hear more often than not is, why are we running snowplows down the road and not snow plowing the road? So when Brighton drives down a county road, we don't plow that county road. But there's no reason we couldn't if we had indemnification agreements and the ability to do so without causing liability to the lower tier. So there's an opportunity. I don't know whether it's an opportunity we're going to sink our teeth into or not, but I think that's one we'll see come forward.
Are there other areas? I was going to ask you, what are some of the snow plowing is a great example. Are there some other examples that you can think of off the top of your head where you can see these opportunities and act on them?
Other examples would be back office work, finance departments, IT, Human resources, those are probably opportunities where we might be able to come together. I think, maybe some people might suggest the amalgamation of fire departments might be in the offing. I'm not sure that that would work. We don't have to look too far to our neighbors who were forced to amalgamate their fire departments, and they're still, 25 years later, they're still having some cultural issues around the amalgamated fire department. So, we want to be careful what we do, and we want to make sure that we're keeping people safe and providing services that people expect us to in as cost-efficient a way as possible. So, these are always tenuous discussions, and we have to be careful how we go down this road.
The Rural Ontario Municipal Association Conference is taking place starting on January 19th. Now, this is a significant opportunity for municipal politicians to meet with provincial ministers and officials. What are the priority items county politicians are seeking to address if they're given a chance?
We'll be talking to the Minister of Municipal Affairs and Housing, specific to workforce housing and housing affordability in Northumberland County. We have a delegation around that. I was fortunate enough to be at the Eastern Ontario Wardens Caucus this past week, and the minister was there at those discussions, so I listened very carefully to what he had to say, and I'm prepared to speak to some of the things that him and his ministry are requiring or going to require of municipalities in order to get funds. So we'll be having those very frank discussions with the minister about how do we get working people into houses, and how do we keep youth and unemployed youth in our communities in for the foreseeable future. We want to talk to our own MPP, the Minister of Labor, about WSIB costs, primarily in paramedicine, and the stresses, mental health stresses that emergency services folks are having, and how do we manage those costs on an ongoing basis, while we also have to backfill those positions when folks are off and dealing with their hardships. So those are a couple of the discussions we're going to be having next week at Roma.
Are you going to be talking at all about the drug crisis?
That's I guarantee you I'll be talking about it. That we don't have an official delegation on that, but it will be. I haven't taken a good look at what the agenda shows for Roma or what the concurrent sessions have, but I know for a fact that the overdose crisis, the drug crisis, will be high on the table for all of our communities. There isn't a community across Northumberland that hasn't felt the impact of the fentanyl crisis.
What about mental health?
Same. I mean, it's same. These are healthcare issues, right? At the end of the day, and they're healthcare issues that impact things like housing and homelessness. So, gone are the days where we can say, this is, and yet we do all the time. But gone are the days where we can say this is a provincial responsibility, this is a municipal responsibility. These things are crossing each other more and more often. We need to figure out how to fund them. We need to figure out how to administer the services for folks who find themselves dealing with the impacts of mental health issues, addiction issues, homelessness issues. Regardless of how they find themselves on the street, we need to find out how best we can help them get off the street and stay off the street. And we can't. And we got to stop pointing fingers at each other.
If I could be so bold as to ask you to wear your Brighton hat for just a moment, are you looking to meet with provincial representatives at Roma to seek funding for your new water treatment facility?
We're not specifically doing that. I have met with the Minister of Infrastructure. I have met with MPP Piccini. We have had our discussions with the MP in case there's federal funding to be had. So, having another wasting someone's time, having the same discussion over and over again, that's not my bag. I hope the ministers all appreciate that. I know our MPP appreciates the position we're in, and advocates for us on a regular basis. I asked him at his levee yesterday when we could expect to find out if we're going to get the grant money, and he said pretty soon. So, I will be asking Mr. Piccini if I can have the ear of the Minister of Infrastructure, I don't need a delegation, I need 5 seconds.
Finally, can you give listeners some reasons why they should be paying attention to what is going on at County Council in 2025?
I think folks should be paying attention to that municipal restructuring conversation and letting us know how best they want us to go down the road. Is amalgamation on your mind, or are we best to simply look at shared services and removing redundancies? Because they're very different discussions if folks have a much larger view of what that goal should be. And I'm always interested to hear how people want us to spend their money. Where are we lacking in services? What should we be servicing better? And how do you think we should be funding those things? Those are important things for me to hear about. We're adding 50 additional childcare spaces this year, in 3 locations across Northumberland County, in Cobourg, Port Hope, and in Warkworth. I already mentioned the 3 housing projects we've got going on, 2 in Cobourg and 1 in Colborne. And we just is today the 13th of January? Yes, today is the first day of our mattress diversion program at the Brighton landfill. So, for a fee, people can bring their mattresses and they don't get put into the dump. We will divert them to a place that will recycle the product. So, these are all things that we work hard to make sure happen for the people of Northumberland, to make sure that we're being responsible to them and to the environment and to all the things around us, to our staff at the same time.
Ryan Ostrander, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Robert, it is truly always a pleasure, and I do appreciate it.
That was Northumberland County Warden Brian Ostrander. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.